to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and as always, I'm really glad that you've decided to join. Comeback. If you use that word in Detroit or to describe Detroit, you're just as likely to start an argument as you are to inspire excitement. The truth is that for lots of us, people who've been here for years and years, the idea of a comeback somehow suggests that we're not here, or that we don't count, or that what's happening to us doesn't really matter in all of the things that are changing in Detroit. And at the same time, there are folks from other places who fondly use the word comeback to describe what's happening in Detroit. Maybe for years, they thought this was a dead place, a place that people were just leaving. And now they're taking note of all the new investment and the people who are moving here. And they are excited about the idea that Detroit will be something more, something better than what it has been. But either way, it's really hard to measure what you mean when you use that word comeback. Anecdotal stories or opinions aren't really sufficient to describe what's actually happening here in the city. How do we measure the money that's being invested in Detroit and the impact it's having? How do we measure what's happening to longtime citizens who live in neighborhoods that have been underinvested for decades? For the past 5 years, Detroit Future City, in partnership with the Kresge Foundation, has conducted a survey to provide Detroit with its own tool to track national and local perceptions of the city, our own lens on the idea of what a comeback is or isn't. They recently released their latest report, which highlights progress the city is making toward a resurgence, as well as areas of improvement they heard from local entrepreneurs and national business leaders. That's where we want to begin the conversation today. Detroit's comeback, if you will. What is it? What is it not? Is it going well, if there is such a thing? And who's being included in that comeback? We've got two great guests here with us to unpack the findings from the latest Detroit Future City report. Anika Goss is the CEO of Detroit Future City, which recently wrote its report about Detroit's reinvestment index, which tracks local and national perceptions of Detroit and its economic growth. Anika, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thanks for having me, Stephen. Good morning.
Also with us is Wendy Jackson. She is the managing director for the Detroit program for the Kresge Foundation, which funded the report. Wendy, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thank you, Stephen, and good morning.
Yeah, it's great to have both of you here. So, Anika, I'm going to start with you. Describe the Detroit Reinvestment Index and talk about Detroit Reinvestment Index 22 and what it's trying to measure.
Thanks. You know, and that's actually a better question for Wendy, because the Detroit Reinvestment Index really started from the Kresge Foundation to sort of take the temperature of national and local business leaders right after the bankruptcy and receivership. And really the idea was to check in over time to see how businesses were viewing Detroit as a business opportunity, whether Detroit was stable enough to continue investment, and what they thought of public support. And so fast forward, that's what the report has been over the past several years. Detroit Future City took it over from Kresge in 2017. So this is our third report that we've done, that we've issued, or 2018, sorry. And I think what we've learned over the past 5 years is how much has changed over time, right? Mm-hmm. So we went from 60% of people having a positive view of Detroit after post-bankruptcy, which we were all really excited about, to 75% of business leaders viewing Detroit as a great place to do business, a city that's stable, and a place of opportunity. And so that this is really the importance of panel surveys like this, just to get a better understanding of how we're viewed and where there are opportunities, which I think is a little different than a comeback.
Yeah.
So we could talk about that later.
Sure, sure. But talk about how you go out about obtaining this information and what the kind of key takeaways are from over time, what people are seeing that's making them feel more optimistic, I guess, about investing here.
Sure. So we actually have used the Kresge Foundation and DFC have used FTI Consulting Services. They're out of New York. They're a consumer service survey company, right? And they are really designed to take completely objective and anonymous surveys, sometimes too objective, where we have to say, okay, pull it back. This is what this means. But they actually surveyed this year 300 both national business leaders with companies over 500 employees and local small businesses, both in the Metro Detroit area and in Detroit, that were under 500 and under 20 employees. So we had a really, and 500 might seem like a small number, but that is what is considered appropriate sample size. And what that means is even if you were to survey more or less, your numbers pretty much stayed the same.
Yeah.
So that really gives us a better sense of how these business leaders are really viewing Detroit. Yeah. And I think what we've learned, I think the really high level takeaways is, and the reason I wanted to sort of challenge that concept of comeback is that I think it less of a comeback and more of a right size. You know, the bankruptcy, I think there was a time when the business leaders really were pretty clear that Detroit was unstable, mm-hmm. at right around that time and for a few years after that. And I think now, especially in this survey, the way they reviewed what kinds of things they need, their expectations of city government, their expectations and needs for employees really actually are very similar to what business leaders are asking for around the country. And we are finally, I think, at the point where we can be competitive nationally with other cities, mm-hmm. In terms of investment, whether you are a large business, mid-sized business, or small business.
Yeah. So I told you that that word is as much likely to start a fight as it is to get people excited. There's never agreement about it.
Yes.
Wendy Jackson, I want to bring you into the conversation here mm-hmm. to talk about Kresge's interest in this and why this matters from the lens of philanthropy and the role that philanthropy has been playing here in Detroit over the last couple of decades.
Well, we saw early on during the years leading up to the bankruptcy and shortly thereafter that Detroit would need its own lens, its own set of tools to measure perceptions about investing in the city. And that was fundamentally, Stephen, the reason why the Kresge Foundation initiated this index as something that the city could take on and own over time to get the kind of data that it needs to determine not only how the city is perceived in terms of its climate for reinvestment nationally, but also among Detroiters and Detroit business leaders. And what is unique about this survey mm-hmm. is these are decision makers, C-suite level business owners and business leaders who are able to make decisions about where they're going to spend dollars to invest. And so the index was really a way for us to have, again, over time, and we're so fortunate to be able to partner with Detroit Future City on this project, but to have that kind of data set that shows over time the progress that the city is making in changing perceptions about its investable proposition.
Yeah, yeah. And Wendy, talk a little more about how this fits into the spectrum of things that philanthropy and Kresge in particular have been focused on. In other words, why does this matter in the sort of long narrative of change in Detroit?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, it gets to this, you know, perceptions matter. and we wanted to make sure that not only at the Kresge Foundation, but in the philanthropic landscape here in the city, we had the kind of tools, especially the data tools, that would help not only us determine where to make investments in terms of grants and social investing, but also provide kind of that guidepost for external investors as well as other internal investors. So this index is actually even quite critical kind of in the toolbox of information that we use at the Kresge Foundation, mm-hmm. but want to make sure it's available to others as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking with Anika Goss, who is CEO of Detroit Future City, also with Wendy Jackson, who's Managing Director of the Detroit Program for the Kresge Foundation. We're talking about the Detroit Reinvestment Index and the most recent report that tracks local and national perceptions of Detroit and its economic growth. We want to hear from you, the listeners, as well. What do you make of the environment for investment here in Detroit? What do you make of the perceptions of Detroit, both locally and nationally, now compared with what they might have been, say, a decade or more ago? What areas do you see getting the most investment here in Detroit? What areas do you feel need more investment? Also, give us a sense, if you're a developer or a business owner or somebody who is trying to find an opportunity to invest in Detroit, what's attracting you to it? What do you need that maybe you don't have in order to make that investment easier or more successful? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation that way. I want to get to some of the takeaways from the report, Anika. As you say, the perceptions of the city and about the city are going in a positive direction. Let's talk about specifically what that means and where we would see that making a difference to those of us who live here.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the biggest statistics that we found, or the bit in the survey, is the number of businesses that not only said they wanted to remain or plan to stay in Detroit was over 50% for national business leaders and 75% for local business leaders. And that is significantly higher than 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I feel like all of the responses to, you know, can we stay in Detroit? Is this the right environment for us? Ew, excuse me.
Oh, bless you.
We're all places where are all really significant numbers to pay attention to, because I feel like 4 years ago when we took the survey, it was much more about, will you please stay in Detroit? This this tone of this report was from these businesses were much more about this is what we need because we plan on staying in Detroit. And what they required were things like infrastructure and water and utilities, including internet and internet as a utility. And these are things that most business owners lead. This is not that unusual. We've also been testing this concept that business leaders would choose a city that had more amenities but was a higher cost city, as opposed to a city that had fewer amenities but was lower cost, right? And that's something that's important to them. 65% selected that this year, and it's been growing over the past every year we've asked that question. And that is a really important question to pay attention to, because I think we often feel like we can just buy our way with tax incentives to hold businesses here. And while tax incentives, business leaders did say that that was important, but that is not the only thing that they're looking for.
Yeah.
And I feel like we really have to pay attention to what we're offering as a city. Because they were asking for things like quality neighborhoods for their employees to live, high access to talent and talent support, mentoring and business programs that would help build their business. All of those things add into a much richer business environment.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking about the Detroit Reinvestment Index with Anika Goss and Wendy Jackson. We are going to get to you, the listeners, next as well. Albert, Mike, David, and Luis, all from Detroit. You'll be up first if you want to join them on the phones. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
Bringing you news that matters.
Stories that impact your life.
Music from the Motor City and around the world.
This is 101.9 WDET.
Detroit's NPR station.
Listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for joining us. Our guests right now are Anika Goss, who is the CEO of Detroit Future City, a local think tank that recently wrote about Detroit's Reinvestment Index, a survey of perceptions both locally and nationally of the desirability of Detroit from an investor standpoint. Also with us is Wendy Jackson. She's the managing director for the Detroit program for the Kresge Foundation. Kresge funded the DFC report. We're talking about the perceptions of our city and how they're changing and how that changes life for those of us who live and work here. And of course, we want to hear from you on the phones as well. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work into the conversation that way. Let's start today with Luis in Detroit. Luis, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephen.
Hey.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I called into the show a couple times before. I'm in Brightmoor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this topic always seems to come up. It's such an amazing thing to talk about, but it doesn't seem to go anywhere. And this is what I'm getting at. Detroit is a city that needs residents. And we've been losing residents for many years. And mm-hmm. I'm one of those residents that came in 6 years ago, and I'm there to stay, you know? I'm at work in Toledo today, but I need to say this. As far as the city goes, we do need talent. And we do need to take care of the families, the neighborhoods, the system that we have to support them. for me, as somebody who is very active in my community and who wants to look for young people to continue this effort, we can never forget that they are growing up, that they need direction, and that they need an education, training, whatever that is. And it's a very hard topic to talk about because, you know, when it comes to education and the school system and how families are getting the support that they need, all I can say is that you guys are doing amazing work. And I know it's hard work because it's going to require, you know, much to help these young people that are coming up right now.
Yeah. Luis, before I get back to our guests, I want to ask you just a little more about the neighborhood where you live. Brightmoor is, of course, a place that has lost lots of population, has been hit hard by lots of other things. You say you moved here 6 years ago, though. I wonder if you see the trajectory there going up, or do you feel like it's stalled a little?
It definitely has stalled, and there was a lot of grassroots efforts back in the day. Mm-hmm. A lot of families, a lot of new neighbors involved, you know, urban farming, you know, nature and all that stuff. But I think overall, even though the city is advancing and the city, you know, continues to, let's say, have big people looking at it as an opportunity, it's still struggling. You know, we got to be realistic about that. And the schools, you know, there is schools being closed and, you know, young people that are inside the city that are growing up, that, you know, they need the help and not just handouts, but like education, support, benefits for their families so that these kids can grow up with hope and with, you know, the energy to be able to, you know, be productive citizens and be proud of where they are.
Yeah. Last question before I get back to our guest, Luis, what brought you to Detroit 6 years ago?
So I'm Colombian and I traveled all over the world. I went to school in Flint. I lived in the suburbs for, I don't know, 10, 15 years, and I never felt at home. Mm. The day I arrived in Detroit, I felt at home. And that's something that I'm really happy to say, that Detroit has been the place to bring me home in the United States.
Wow.
The people in Brightmoor, in Detroit, amazing. You know, I have nothing but love. I receive nothing but love from my neighbors, from everyone within the city. So thanks for asking that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Luis, I really love the things that you're talking about here in your call, and welcome to Detroit. It's so great to have new people along with those of us who've been here a long time who want to be here and are invested in the idea of staying. Anika and Wendy, he's hitting on lots of things that we've had conversations about many times. I'm eager to hear both of your reactions. Anika, I'll start with you.
Yeah, thank you, Luis, if you're still listening, because Brightmoor is a very special place. And I am so pleased that you felt at home there. But what he's saying is very, very true. When we surveyed Metro Detroit small businesses, and particularly those that were led by people of color, economic opportunity was the second largest priority for those business owners, so only second to additional incentives to start small businesses. So he's exactly right. And how we can actually organize our resources to, and actually across the board, so people of color, very small business or micro businesses with less than 20 employees, and female owned businesses, really said that making Detroit a place that is thriving and has opportunities for everyone economically should be a priority. And I think what's really interesting about that, Stephen, is that we often think of that phrase of economic opportunity for all as something that's associated with mission-driven work. Mm-hmm. And what I think we're learning from this is that there is a business case for this.
Yeah.
That businesses want to be in a place where not only their employees can thrive, but they can grow their business. And that's what we mean by economic opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. Wendy, the thing that Luis was talking about that, of course, concerns me is this idea of lost momentum, maybe. The idea mm-hmm. that things were moving ahead in places like Brightmoor at a faster pace, maybe several years ago, and that they've stalled. And I hear that from folks in some neighborhoods some of the time. But, you know, overall, of course, the city's indicators say we're still moving forward. But that sense of what's happening in people's lives and in their neighborhoods is terribly important, too. And I know that that the work at Kresge is really focused on that feeling and making sure that that everybody is sharing in it.
Yes, Stephen, and thank you, Luis, if you are still listening, for your beautiful comments and welcome to Detroit. So yes, this issue of the, I consider it unevenness, Stephen, and particularly in our neighborhoods, is still very much a priority for our work at the Kresge Foundation, and we do that in partnership with a number of other philanthropies as well as city government. But, you know, this issue of how do you continue to make sure neighborhoods and residents have the resources to continue their efforts, whether it's investing in new kinds of parks or projects that bring the community together, improvements in education and youth development, are still very much a priority in the work that we do, as well as making sure that we advocate for those kinds of investments in our neighborhoods.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was something else that Luis touched on that I think was really important, and it kind of relates to Anika's comment about the business case for economic opportunity, and that is with education. Mm-hmm. And as you know, Stephen, we partner pretty significantly with in particular, the Detroit Public Community School District. But starting to involve education in this broader conversation about economic opportunity and their role as city builders as well is critical. And I think Luis's comments beautifully lifted that up.
Yeah, yeah. Again, Luis, welcome to the city, and thanks so much for calling and participating in the conversation here. Let's go next to David in Detroit. David, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a new resident. I moved here about 6 years ago, and I've seen some changes. I live on the east side, and I've seen Dakota and Flexengate, Atlantis, all build up. And I've seen there's a depot, a commercial truck depot very close to me, and a steel mill that's revitalized, or steel company, he called it. And I've driven about 1 million miles as an Uber and Lyft driver in those 6 years, all around Detroit and Metro Detroit, and I've seen just enormous changes. Now, one thing that Luis might have touched on a little bit, or one thing that an observation, remember, both me and Luis are brand new. One thing that I've noticed, though, is that as Detroiters get good jobs, they tend to move to Taylor and Warren and Easter and places outside the city. And I talked to them about it, and they say that, you know, there's just a lot of crime and hard feelings that are here in the city for them. So that's one thing to watch out for. And also, I remember when Amazon was looking for their HQ2, and they were weighing out all the different cities, and they said they were still weighing out Nashville, which is where I'm from, which is a metropolitan area of about 1 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And they had excluded Detroit, which is the Detroit metropolitan area is about 4 million people. And they said the reason was because of Detroit's reputation.
Wow.
Now, there's a lot more talent in Metro Detroit. With these universities, these are some of the smartest people in America, and that's proven.
Yeah.
But the reputation I think they were talking about was the reputation for all of these community organizations to want to get in line to make demands on companies – that are making inroads in Detroit. It seems like if you want to build something in Detroit and receive any tax abatements, there's like four or five nonprofits that show up and say, well, you've got to build this, and you've got to do this, and you've got to do this. And I think that is harming Detroit's reputation. Having said that, Amazon's building, what, 3 million square feet at 8 Mile and Woodward, sure. And they didn't ask for any tax abatements, and they didn't negotiate with any nonprofits. So I think we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, you know, David, that's interesting. I mean, I would obviously push back against the what you're saying about the nonprofits that show up and ask for different kinds of investments from people who want to come here and locate business. I think that's actually an important part of the conversation. And in many ways, those nonprofits represent the residents who live in these neighborhoods and who will be affected by it. But I totally understand, you know, the flip side of that too, which is that you're a business and trying to make money, and that sometimes these things that we're asking for pinch into that profit margin. But the idea of the loss of population, I think, David, is the thing that really jumps out at me from your comments, and the fact that when people start to do well here, often they look for another community to live in. Wendy, I'll give you a first crack at addressing David's comments.
Well, thank you, David, for your question. I agree. The issues around continued population loss, if you will, are what we're hyper-focused on in our work and in partnership with Detroit Future City. And I think Anika will talk about this because her organization has looked extensively at some of the reasons why. You know, I point back to the index itself, which, you know, in many ways is a barometer of future things that we need to focus on as a community. And this issue of public infrastructure came up time and time again in the index. And it relates, I think, David, to your comments even about the nonprofit sector, which we partner with and support considerably. And it is about how do we ensure a better quality of life for Detroiters and making sure Detroiters have the kinds of amenities, financial support, quality education, all of those things that, you know, we all want, and making sure that, you know, we're working in concert to get them. And, you know, this issue of continuing to improve our public infrastructure not only supports reinvestment in the city, but also improves quality of life for Detroiters. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be kind of the next level of work that we all need to collectively double down on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anika, what's your thoughts about what David's talking
about? That's a great underhand. Thank you. Underhand softball. Thank you, David, if you're still listening. I think, so first, I do want to say that a lot of community groups show up for community benefit agreements and other negotiations because the majority of those large-scale companies that are coming in are getting public tax incentives.
Sure.
And it's the public, it's the residents that are actually paying for those tax incentives. And so they do have a right to expect for companies to return, not just have their business there, not just have their company there, but to be a good corporate partner in communities. And in the case of Stellantis, it was a land swap that I think a lot of people would say was pretty damaging to that community, where they did not necessarily live up to even their community commitment. And so that's my opinion on that. And I think there are a lot of people that actually would agree. So that's one piece of it. The second piece of it around population loss is the big challenge that I think we're running into. And in the index, as Wendy said, public investment and infrastructure were the major issues, and people leave, which directly connects to what people have told us In additional reports, in our Black Middle Class report and other reports where we've done focus groups, is that the quality of neighborhoods makes it very difficult to stay. Mm-hmm. And that is directly related to infrastructure, right? So how stable is your neighborhood? Is there lighting, sidewalks, clean water? These are all of the things that businesses, when we unpacked what infrastructure meant, these are all of the things that they said they wanted also. And so if we are looking at all of these things in a silo, then yes, we'll end up continuing to lose population because we're not stabilizing the neighborhoods, or we're only stabilizing neighborhoods that are followed by economic development or where there is new economic development. But trying to make the investment where we can that actually connects community to people, to business, is actually how we can actually stabilize some of these communities and retain residents, more residents here in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, what David's pointing out in this kind of micro example of a business being asked to do things that would help a community, in addition to building a factory and providing jobs, is part of the larger narrative, which is that all of this investment in the city does have to pay some dividends for the people who live here. And mm-hmm. and we're not the only city that struggles with that, obviously. But I think we do worse with it in some ways than other cities. There is a lot that has happened here that it's hard to point to why it matters or how it matters to so many people who live here, and mm-hmm. you do have to push to make that happen. You have to push businesses and investors to see the bigger picture, both on that micro level and on that in that larger narrative.
I would agree.
Yeah. Okay. I want to take one more quick call here. Hammer in Detroit. Go ahead.
Greetings. Good morning. Appreciate your program. I was calling in response to the previous caller in regards to Detroit's reputation and the fact of all the companies that have made projects here in Detroit. I was intimately involved with the State Fairgrounds, intimately involved with the introduction of Amazon Warehouse, which, by the way, has now been delayed for about a year for the opening. Mm-hmm. The Amazon didn't get tax swaps, but it did get a plot of land that was well under market value, and it is currently an issue of dispute about whether Detroit was entitled to a community benefits agreement,
right,
which the previous caller was railing against. It is about the quality of life of Detroiters, and we know that in Stellantis, even though they had a community benefits agreement, the quality of life has degenerated around the plant for reasons of environmental pollution, and we are similarly concerned with all the new semi-trucks that will be coming to the Amazon warehouse, similarly with regard to pollution. So I think that we ought not sacrifice our quality of life for the sake of economic development. Detroiters, you know, are full human beings, and we need we deserve healthy environment as well as, folks in non-industrial areas.
Yeah, yeah. Hammer, I'm really glad you called and added that context to what's going on over at the Amazon project, which, again, I think if you live here, you have to be happy that Amazon wants to do that and provide those jobs. But there are other things to consider as well. And the fairness of how that happened and the impact that that'll have on that neighborhood are some of them. Quickly, before we have to break, Anika and Wendy, we've gotten a number of comments on social and some folks waiting on the phones talking about schools and saying that it really is just about public education. We're making some progress there, but we still that's still a lever that that I think we've got to pull a little harder to keep people here in Detroit. Wendy, I'll give you the first crack at that.
100% agree, Stephen, and I look forward to looking on the socials later after the call. But yes, I am working in partnership right now with Detroit Public School District on some work on the Mary Grove campus and some of the other initiatives that they have underway to improve education. And they have done, you know, made tremendous strides in that regard. But it's still, you know, much that needs to be done. And but fortunately, in Dr. Beattie's leadership and the leadership of the new board, I'm optimistic that we'll continue to make those improvements.
Yeah, yeah. Anika, how specific were some of the survey respondents about things like schools? You said that they were talking about quality of life and neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Are they talking about education?
They, you know, schools specifically did not come up as much as talent in general. Mm-hmm. So talent is often connected to schools and how prepared people are to either run a business or to work at a business at a higher level. However, we know that the two are directly connected, right? That a high quality talent is an educated talent, mm-hmm. right? And educated at whatever level, whether it's educated with a 2-year degree or some sort of certification or a 4-year degree. But education attainment generally, and what we know, it makes a better talent pool generally. And I think the business leaders referred to a stronger talent pool as being one of their top issues, that's really what they were referring to. Yeah. Like, really, and if they had to leave, that would be one of the top reasons, is that they were not feeling like Detroit's talent pool was not as strong as other cities where they could be located.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Anika Goss and Wendy Jackson, it's always great to have you guys here on Detroit Today. Thanks so much for joining to talk about the Detroit Reinvestment Index.
Thank you so much for having us, Stephen.
Yes, thank you, Stephen.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to switch subjects here. We're going to talk about the ACLU of Michigan and a racial discrimination case against the Michigan State Police that has a new settlement. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.